Fastermy, good evening. I'm Siobhan Fletcher, and it's about time we take another look at Pride here on the Isle of Man, isn't it? Back in 2023, we took a deep dive into the history of Pride the world over, looking at how it all began and why it matters today. Now, just last month, a short verbatim documentary specifically exploring the Manx story leading up to the decriminalisation of homosexuality here in 1992 hit the internet. It features actors portraying some names that are all too familiar to us in settings we see every day. In the PM, all the pretty girls, they have a couple drinks, all the pretty girls sun up, they wanna kiss all the pretty girls, they got to have a taste of a pretty girl. In this special island life, we're going to take a visit to the set of No Man Is an Island and hear more about some special screenings coming up later this month. But first, if you missed the A Brief History of Pride series the first time around, here's a little snippet of episode 2 to give you a flavour. As is well documented, on the 5th of July 1991, or Tynwald Day, gay rights campaigner Alan Shea exercised his democratic right to present a petition of grievance to the island's parliament in St John's. His petition sought a change in the law relating to the decriminalisation of homosexuality. I went and did some digging in the Manx Radio archives and I found our coverage from that day.
There are fears that the ancient pomp and ceremony of the open-air Tynwald sitting may take a back seat this year to the continuing row over plans by gay rights campaigners to use the occasion to highlight their cause. Groups who are both for and against a change in the island's laws on homosexuality will be present on the Fairfield. To date, only one petition for redress of grievance has been made public, with local gay activist Alan Shea calling on the government to restore the right of individual petition to Europe. Despite criticism that he'll be desecrating Tynwald Day, Mr. Shea says he still intends to appear as a concentration camp inmate.
I've got so much support now. I wasn't going to wear it. And now I've been inspired by so much support that I'm receiving from parents who are going to walk with me with their children. The costume will be definitely worn.
Official guests from Australia, Norway, Southern Ireland and the UK will be present at Tynwald, which will be presided over for the first time by Lieutenant Governor Sir Lawrence Jones.
Alan was joined on the lawns of Tynwald Hill by members of Outrage, a UK-based pressure group to stage their lawful protest. They brought placards and wore T-shirts with slogans such as Not Guilty.
Traditional meeting of the Manx people.
Please, you want to remove it.
They're not even Manx. Nobody asked them here, so they should go.
Well, it's not a kerfuffle, but the Manx public are not, some of them at least, are not taking to this lightly, and the police are moving in and asking them to cool it and to take the banners down. They're asking them to lower the banners, but they're declining. But that was just a small incident there. Inspector Platt of the Manx Constabulary said to cool it, and I think that is probably the extent of the protest, though it may re-emerge when the petitions are actually presented.
In presenting his petition, Alan made a statement, and no detail was accidental.
Well, it's actually all to do with Bent, the concentration camp gay play done with Ian McKellen and Michael Cashman, and a few other things, with the history of Nazi Germany, where everyone keeps forgetting was, it wasn't just the Jews, it was gays, it was disabled. And when they rescued them, these people were taken back out, but the gays were left in because it was against the law. So gays were even put back into the concentration camps. They weren't released. So I thought, put focus in the world, what's happening in the Isle of Man, I thought the way the abuse was given on the island by politicians, by people, homophobes, I had the brainwave idea of creating a concentration camp uniform, which was made from Marks and Spencer's pyjamas. A friend of mine, Tony, he put the stripes on. Then I took it out for its first day out, believe it or not, at London Pride in 1991, without the three legs of man. When we came back to the Isle of Man, we all just said, you know, we've got to focus this costume, what kind? And then we thought, three legs of man, pink triangle, because that's what gays were in the camps. And then we put the government officer's phone number below, which was 626262, which they changed, believe it or not, after the costume was worn. And they banned outrageous costumes. So no one could wear a costume, anything similar to this now. But it was to show focus on homophobia in the Isle of Man and to get an outdated law passed. Because many people don't realise people were committing suicide, they were dying, you know. And they all had families here, so...
Do you think that it's coming over from elsewhere that maybe shines a light on the issues in a place? Like, you maybe if you grew up here, it's just something you're kind of like, well, that's the way it is, you get on with it. Whereas if you come on over from somewhere else, you want to make a change.
Well, I came over here thinking, and I've always said this, that was like the Isle of Man was part of the United Kingdom. You know, I didn't see any difference. Been a bit naive, probably, but it's only when Hazel brought in the sexual offence and I said, what's all this? And it's like, oh, it's against the law. Oops, a daisy. So, you know, and I did confess of breaking the law because part of the protest is to try to get arrested by the police in the Isle of Man, and they wouldn't arrest me. I went public on all the interviews, even with Ian McKellen and other people that have broken the law. I've publicly said this. But the police never came near me. Maybe because I was under the protection of Amnesty International, because of all the abuse, death threats I was receiving, my phones were tapped. You know, in the Isle of Man, the police in those days could do whatever they want. They didn't have pace. They could put you under extreme pressure. And out of this extreme pressure, look what happened. People died. And, you know, we got an apology of sorts, you know, but we've all got memories. We live with these things every day. I do. I've lost people too on the Isle of Man as well. So
then you do the protest at Tynwald Day, and what happened after that?
Well, I was advised by people that I should leave the Isle of Man for a week or two. So I shot down to London and I used a friend's flat in Chelsea for a couple of weeks. And then I came back and it was a different response when I came back. So, I mean, I got lots of phone calls when I came back saying, you know, well done, keep up the work, and that's what I continue to do, so.
Behind every protest that sees a successful result, there are lawmakers fighting to make the changes necessary to be able to render it as such. In this case, a handful of MHKs wanted to see Alan's vision take shape. One of them was Hazel Hannan, who was elected in 1986 as the MHK for Peel. She says it all came down to a simple principle: human rights for all.
I was elected to the House of Keys in 1986, and before that, Tynwald House of Keys, I'm not absolutely sure, because it was done in private, they decided that because of the Birch had been to the European Court of Human Rights, that they would give notice that they were going to pull out of the European Court of Human Rights. And that's how it all started. It was one of the issues that came up. If the Isle of Man signed up again to the European Convention on Human Rights, the law would have to be changed to legalise homosexuality between consenting males over 21. And the Speaker brought forward a motion, because obviously he'd been there, this was Sir Charles Carouche, brought forward a motion that we should sign up again to the convention. And so there was a big debate on it, and that's when I spoke. I actually made quite a good speech on it. And anyway, it was lost. That was in 1987, and that motion was deferred, and it was taken up again by Brigadier Butler. He was Ramsay. And so he moved the deferment. He also brought forward a motion to adjourn it. So when it came back to the House of Keys again, when he brought it back, he was the first again to speak on it and the reason for and everything. So that debate happened. That was May the 5th, and they didn't want to include any change in the law with relation to homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And that was also lost. But then in December, there was a second reading of the Sexual Offences Bill, where it left homosexuality on the statute book, mm-hmm. and it wasn't included in the bill because it was upgrading a number of issues with relation to sex offences. Then it went to a select committee, the first of two select committees along its lifetime. And it went to three members, and that was Butler, Madrill and Quine, all against change of the law. But that's how it was. And I moved all my notices of motion, bringing in the changes. Also, rape and marriage. I was able to introduce that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, we were able to get the law changed in 1992. But it was a long uphill struggle. Miles Walker was chief minister, and he actually supported the change.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he supported homosexuality, because they all said how horrendous it was and how awful it was. And, you know, I mean, you don't have to think about what people do in private. That's up to them. But it wasn't when it came to men, you see. And I think they all felt a bit threatened by it. But they were very nasty about the whole thing. And, yeah, they were all sort of holier than thou. There was a lot of holier than thou people out in the community as well. And, of course, everybody thought that I would never get elected again. And anyway, I did. Miles Walker came under a lot of threats. Family did. And so that was nasty. He had a government position to uphold things like the convention, human rights for us all the freedoms, the Article 8, which respects family and privacy and all the rest of that. And I think most of us came under some sort of pressure, like heavy breathing and saying nasty things down the phone and, you know, the kids picking up the phone and other people generally, you know, within the British Isles and further afield, people in Brussels supporting me, people in the entertainment industry, Michael Kalman and Ian McClellan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Stonewall, Tim Barnett was brilliant supporting us. There was also, you know, other people, because they knew the pressure that we were all under.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted change. We wanted respect for our people. And we didn't think that it would be any different. We didn't think that people would behave differently. We didn't think we'd be invaded by homosexuals. And we didn't think, you know, all of these sort of things.
Mm.
We thought the Manx people were very understanding, and they'd already accepted homosexuals living amongst them. And so it was just something that we felt was quite natural to change the law. And, you know, I'm speaking to you on a day when the law has been brought in Uganda, which is a member of the Commonwealth, and it has brought in the most horrendous law, and the people in Uganda must be very, very frightened. And I feel for them, because if somebody thinks somebody is gay, they can go to the police. They have to go to the police and say that person is gay. Because if they know and they don't say anything, they could be imprisoned.
Mm. Is it difficult then, when you're one of these people who've like really fought to make a change in terms of legislation and, you know, bringing forward these rights, to see countries repealing their laws? And there would be someone in Uganda who probably fought just as hard as you did to get the laws through, which are now being repealed. I just wonder what your thoughts are when you see things like that happening.
Oh, yes, it's soul-destroying, because we have to be aware that things can happen here as well. You know, the law can be changed. We've got to remain vigilant, you know, and understand it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, there is this thing, somebody came for somebody and I didn't do anything, and somebody else came and for somebody else,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't do anything, and then they came for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that could happen here, it could happen, you know, could happen anywhere. And it's soul destroying, that what these people must be going through must be, I mean, we went through it to a certain extent here when the police took action at a Nobles Park. So, I mean, that was a dreadful time for people. And not just there, but we had other young lads taking their own lives because mm-hmm. of pressure. And, yeah, so it's very sad.
Now, much of that fated Tynwald Day protest is pretty much old news to some of us here on the island. The photograph of Alan in his iconic striped pyjamas in St. John's is seared into the memory. But for many people around the world, that story isn't so familiar. In fact, the description for a new short documentary deems it a little-known chapter of gay history. Directed by John Crane and funded by BFI Doc Society, The Guardian and Isle of Man Arts Council, No Man is an Island was primarily filmed here on the Isle of Man last year. It delves into the decriminalisation debates in vivid detail. Through verbatim reconstruction and newly discovered archives, it looks at the impact of parliamentary debates, controversial media coverage and overreaching police surveillance. One of the shoots was in the House of Keys, and I got to take a little look behind the scenes as they filmed a verbatim speech from Hazel Hannan.
I am sorry that some of you feel so insecure, so afraid of your own sexuality that you imagine people, heterosexual or homosexual, will want to flaunt their sexuality to the community at large. We want to get away from this attitude that every homosexual wants to boogie you all, because that is not the case. We're not trying to make it compulsory.
During a break in filming, I caught up with members of the cast and producer Dermot Hughes.
Can you tell me a little bit about the project? So what drew you to it? Why you wanted this story told?
Yeah, so it came about through the director, John Crane. He's a good friend of mine. John is a Manx man, Manx filmmaker, and approached me with the story of sort of the history of gay rights on the island. I didn't know much about it. It has a similar history to Ireland in terms of its relationship with the gay community. And when we started digging into it, we kind of really discovered just the breadth of the campaign, you know, Alan Jay's protests at Tynwald Day and, you know, Hazel Hannan and Alan Bell's kind of real campaigning for it. So we felt it was a story that needed to be shared at a wider community. It came so much later than what happened in the UK, and I was shocked to hear that. So we felt it just needed to be shared and given, you know, what's happening around the world at the moment with other countries and how some of their gay rights are regressing. I think it's important to be told that these hard-fought gay rights aren't always a given.
And so what's it like then, you know, I've spoken to some of the actors today, filming in locations like this, like you're actually in the House of Keys filming these scenes that are so powerful, and then you've got Hazel Hannan watching on as the actress playing her is reciting her, you know, speeches to members, you know, what's that like?
It's powerful, as you said, very emotional. John and I have been working on this for 5 years, and when he put together what we wanted to do through the verbatim techniques of using radio interviews and TV interviews, literally word for word, we always hoped that we would get the right cast in place. And with Babs, Gwilym playing Hazel, and Andy playing Alan Bell, it's incredible today to see it all come together, especially with them watching. It makes it really emotional. It was really, especially for Hazel and Alan, it was really important. And I think I feel proud that we're able to tell their story. So, yeah, a big day today.
My name's Sam Holland.
And who are you playing in this production?
I'm playing Alan Shea.
And what is that like when sort of the legend himself is in the building?
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's been a real honour to play him, sort of full stop. And then, yeah, obviously I had the chance to meet him a few times now. We spoke on the phone before I came out here. And then, yeah, the day before we started filming, I spent the evening with him and his husband and his little pup, Charlie. So, yeah, that was a real pleasure and great to sort of know more about him before I was playing him. And then, yeah, today it's great to be down here and be with some of the real people, Hazel Hannan and Alan Bell as well. And yeah, just sort of soaking in the atmosphere, it's great.
And so what's it like sort of being involved in this project? Because as I've just been saying earlier now, I guess the story of the Isle of Man is really kind of known on the Isle of Man, but beyond that, not necessarily. So what's it like to kind of shine a light on this history?
Yeah, amazing. As soon as I read the script, I knew it was something that I was desperate to be involved in. And then, yeah, thankfully got the part. So from there, just sort of really just tried to find out as much about the history, as much about that time, as much about Alan as I possibly could. So yeah, it's great to be able to shine a light on the story. I think it was obviously a big thing back then, but I think you can sort of draw a lot of parallels with where we are now. And although we've come a long way in the last 30 years, there's still a long way to go as well. So yeah, I think it's a story of real importance with a fantastic script and fantastic crew. So I'm sure it'll be very successful as well.
So then obviously filming here on the Alamein, you're on location for a lot of these things that actually happened. Mm-hmm. How's that add to your process as an actor as well, actually being in the place?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we did a lot of our stuff yesterday at a house that sort of resembled Alan's, and at the Manx radio scenes, which were sort of recreated within one of the locations that we had. But Alan's house was literally like the next road on. So again, yeah, being there the day before filming and sort of getting to put a place to that, you know, the images in the film was brilliant. And yeah, obviously a lot of it is steeped in history. And again, you know, being here at the House of Keys today, it's amazing to be able to sort of recreate those moments in the actual place. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Hi, yeah, my name is Barbara Quilliam. People know me as Babs.
All right, perfect. So you're playing Hazel in this production, and as I was just speaking to one over there, living legend. So what's it like to sort of play her, and what research went into it for you?
What's it like to play Hazel? Well, when John told me that I'd been selected, I was absolutely delighted, honoured, and absolutely terrified at the same time. I mean, I know Hazel by sight. We hadn't really chatted too much, but I grew up in Peel, and so I knew of her. I knew what a formidable lady she was. And yeah, it is an absolute honour, honestly. I am so thrilled to be playing her. And I met with Hazel. Hazel was very generous with her time, and I came to the Isle of Man. I'm actually from the Isle of Man originally, but living in London. And so I came over to the Isle of Man early before the production and met with Hazel, very generous with her time, and we sat and we chatted for several hours. And of course I did my own research, going through, you know, the files and the Hansard reports, etc. So you have to put a lot of research in it. You have to, if you want to do the role justice, particularly with something verbatim and something such as, you know, it's so important.
And obviously, the beauty of this is you're actually filming in the House of Keys, in the location where this all happened. So, as an actor as well, what's that like? Because surely that adds a level of, you know, realism to the whole project.
Absolutely. As soon as, you know, the process starts as an actor, the process starts as soon as you do your research. But once you come on set and, you know, the makeup starts and the costume, and then sort of that adds another level. And once you get onto your location, and this particular location is amazing. I mean, I've never actually been in the House of Keys, so it's a real treat, but it definitely gives it authenticity and helps you just develop a nuanced role.
And then I guess for you then, as a Manxie, what's it like to tell this story? Because obviously in the Isle of Man, it's very well known. We kind of know this history, I would say. But obviously, once this goes to broadcast, there'll be people out there who don't know our Manx history. So what's it like to bring that to kind of almost the world stage?
It's just so important. It's really important. And as I said, it's a huge honour. And I was, yeah, quite surprised when I was telling some of my colleagues and friends back in London, I'm going to do this film. And, you know, it's about, you know, how the law was changed and how, you know, homosexuality was eventually legalised and brought into line with the UK. None of them had a clue. Not a clue. So it's really important, and I think the film will absolutely fly, and you know, I think it's going to do an absolute justice to a really important story.
If you're interested in watching No Man Is an Island on the big screen, you'll get your chance next week. The island's first ever Pride Film Festival is to get underway on Friday the 27th of June. Dubbed Pride on Screen, it will consist of three consecutive nights of LGBTQ+ stories screened in the Port St Mary Town Hall. It's a variation on the regular film night, Friday Flicks and Food, which sees attendees encouraged to bring their own supper and drinks to screenings, all while raising money for the local community. Each feature film next weekend will be preceded by a screening of the short film. Our own Howard Kane sat down with organiser and MHK for Russian, Michelle Haywood, to find out more.
Every single night there is a screening of No Man Is an Island. It's a nice short film, as you well know.
and we'll be showing that as our opener each night. So I've been in touch with the directors and we're just getting copies sent over. So that'll show every single night because I think it deserves a wider audience, and then we'll move on to the feature film to follow.
And is that the first time, because I forget now, they're doing a preview and I can't remember whether they did one on the island. Is this the first time it's been screened on the island? Or?
I know they did a preview, you're right. It was on the same night as the Awards for Excellence, so back in November, only at the Broadway Theatre. And it was quite a small group that were invited to go and attend. So I was lucky enough to be there. I think it's fantastic. I think it's very moving. And I think it deserves a wider audience. I know it's been released on the internet, we've got permission to show it as part of the film festival. So that'll be showing every single night, and then we'll move on to our bigger feature.
Splendid, because I'm actually in it briefly for myself.
I've seen you in it.
But I haven't seen it myself yet.
So you're going to have to come down either the Friday, the Saturday or the Sunday night. And then Sunday night, the feature is Call Me By Your Name. I'm hoping that somewhere in there's something for everyone who can come along and join in the fun.
You've been listening to a special episode of Island Life, crossing over with A Brief History of Pride, to tell you all about the short documentary No Man Is an Island. If you missed any of the programme and want to catch up, or you want a link to the documentary, or even more details about those screenings, you can find everything you need in the description of this podcast at manxradio.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I've been Siobhan Fletcher. Thank you for listening.